My name's Craig Forte, and I'm a research associate with the Family Services Association of Toronto. And I've been working on various research projects and helping out with the Falling Fortunes report as a University of Toronto student doing a summer placement with Family Services Association in research.
Why was this study initiated?
Well, the study, I guess, initiated from a past study that was done in the early 90s that sort of looked at the status of young families in Toronto. And so Pedro Barata, who's the researcher at the Family Services Association, decided that it might be a good idea to sort of bring that study back to life and see if there's been any significant changes in the status of young families in Canada since that time.
What were the methods used, or what was your research methodology?
The research methodology? Essentially, what Pedro had done is he's taken the census tract data from 1981, 1991, and 2001, and he's done a comparative analysis of the data based on the statistics provided by Statistics Canada. And we've defined a young family essentially as any family where there's a member of the household that's 35 or younger. That's the head of the household. And essentially, it comprises just Toronto. We're looking at just Toronto data in terms of the family. And we're using, in terms of the low-income poverty cutoff to show what's a low-income family and what's not, we're using the before-tax LICO, which is a standard in the policy field for measuring poverty lines.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
No problem.
So what did the research study conclude or find?
Well, what we found in the study was that the poverty rate actually among families in Toronto has increased by 56%, so that's in the past 20 years from 1981 to 2001. Essentially, that means that the poverty rate in 1981 was 24%, and it's risen to 38% in 2001 for families that are like young. And so, essentially, young families have fallen behind. Young families are worse off now than they were 10 and 20 years ago. And the gap between older and younger generations is growing even bigger. So, for instance, most age groups actually saw a decline in their incomes or fortunes, relative decline in their incomes and fortunes in the last 20 years. However, the age group of people that were in the 55 and above tended to see gains in their fortunes. Some of the reasons we've noted for this falling behind, it seems to be the job market has changed significantly. So while governments in the private sector have boasted about employment and job growth, over the last several years we've actually seen a rise in part-time jobs, contract jobs, seasonal or like what they call own account self-employment jobs. Things that, you know, people like Naomi Klein and Douglas Copeland have termed sort of like mick jobs, right, where the jobs really aren't stable, sound, and quality type jobs. And at the same time, we found that younger people today are actually both more highly educated than any other generation in Canadian history, yet more poor than any generation in recent history. The studies also found that compounding on the lack of quality job is a significant deterioration of the social security system. So there's been, for instance, a good example is the skyrocketing cost of education. Also, there's been less than one-fifth of employed workers now qualify for employment insurance, which forces many families to rely on social security system that has been radically stripped down, right? So just to get on the education side of things, when we looked at it, students in Ontario now have sort of been pinched at both ends. While there's been less grants being provided than ever before, and with loans being more restrictive than ever before, we're also seeing a rise in tuition over the past decade, it's actually risen 137%. And so students are more and more graduating with negative wealth instead of positive wealth in Canada. And so these sort of factors are compounding to make it more difficult for young people in Canada, along with the fact that the majority of young families in Toronto are of immigrant descent as of 2001, and they are finding it very difficult to transfer their skills into quality jobs as well, even though immigrant families tend to be proportionately more highly educated than young Canadians even. And so that's another thing that we found in the study that was really like a very interesting and a devastating factor, I think. And so those, I guess, would be our main findings for the study. Along with the report that the CSPC and Family Services Association did on falling fortunes, we also did a series of community-wide interviews with young families and young parents that's titled Community Voices. And Community Voices is sort of a joint report with the Falling Fortunes report. And what the families are saying is that they don't see any hope right now. They don't see any hope for the opportunity to save for education, whether it's their own education or the education of their children. And many of the people are very discouraged with the way the Ontario Social Assistance Program works. It's very difficult to get your loans, and it's very difficult to pay them back. And with rising tuition, Ontario spends one of the least in all of Canada on in each individual student. It's becoming more and more difficult to get the type of education you need to get out of get out of the poverty cycle, and frankly, once you have that education, what we're seeing is that you still don't receive the quality jobs needed to sort of build a family or build a home, and that's I think that's very something of great concern to a lot of the families that are out here in Toronto and that are struggling to get by. And I'm sure it's the same across Canada right now.
What were your findings in terms of families that just have one sole income or just one sole parent?
You mean one-parent families or sole income families?
Yep.
We've actually found that the rate of poverty among sole income or one income earner families has increased larger proportionately to two income families. And we've also seen a significant rise in single income families. I believe the rate of single income families has increased significantly since 1981. Some of the reasons for that is just there's been more acceptance of single-income families in society, in Canada at least, and as well, there's been a stronger push for single earners to make it out and try and make it into the world, I guess. And so the poverty rates are very high among single-income families. One of the statistics we did find was that Toronto's poor families with children, regardless of the parents' age, are actually so poor right now that it would take, on average, more than $15,000 a year to get them up to the poverty line, where it's seen as a reasonable amount to raise a family. And so this is a significant difference from the past years, where the numbers have been in the 7,000s or 6,000s. So the jump is substantial, and it's been really substantial. Majority of the people at lone parent families, there was 27% of families in 2001 were lone parent families, and that's up from 24% in 1991 and 18% in 1981.
In the report that was written, there was some talk about maintaining the traditional intergenerational contract. Do you mind explaining what that is and how that is being changed by the falling fortunes that young families are experiencing?
Essentially, the intergenerational contract has a lot to do with the parents' generation funding the necessary social infrastructure to help their children's generation, right? And the children's generation, once they get older, funding the necessary social infrastructure to ensure that the parents' generation, which is now retired, receives the sort of services and care that they require as well. What we are seeing is that the intergenerational contract is being lost, that older families, specifically sort of like what we're terming, I guess, the baby boom generation, has tended to, you know, lobby for tax cuts and lobby for sort of a shrinking of the social infrastructure, which is having a significant negative impact on our younger generations and is also causing sort of a crisis because it's this generation that is supposed to be able to fund the older generation once they retire, but with the larger numbers and the lack of quality jobs, it's putting a very big stress on this sort of contract between the older generation and younger generations in Canada.
So what were some of your recommendations that came out of the report?
Well, the Family Services Association, we've, in partnership with the Community Social Planning Council of Toronto, have come up with three significant recommendations. The first recommendation being better labor market policies. Specifically, we're proposing that somebody has to take leadership on the jobs issue. And right now, we've called on Mayor David Miller to convene a good jobs summit and a good jobs task force. He's responded with very positive feedback on the Good Jobs Summit, and I know that there is discussions in the works to pursue this this type of Good Jobs Summit, where we're looking at bringing together public sector, private sector, nonprofit sector partners to look at the job market and see how we can bring about quality jobs for young people in Canada. We're also working to make sure that the federal government retains their promise with respect to the National Child Care Program, and we've called on governments to revamp income security programs to support younger families. And finally, we also believe that we need to strengthen our community infrastructure. So that's a reinvestment in affordable housing, a reinvestment in post-secondary education, and a reinvestment in the social structures that have been severely neglected over the last 10, 15 years. And we think that those solutions are just the first step in reversing the trend of higher poverty for young families.
Hugh McKenzie with the Ontario Alternative Budget has suggested that in order for the provincial government to reinvest in families and neighborhoods that need to seriously rebuild their revenues in the next few years through tax hikes and tightening loopholes in income tax rules, do you think that MPPs and, I guess, associated MPs on the federal level, as well as the general public, could be possibly open and for changes in?
Well, I think that there's definitely been a reversal of the public attitude towards sort of the neoliberal-dominated thinking that tax cuts will generate, you know, the sort of social and economic systems that we need to have healthy communities. I think that's definitely in the decline, and I think that that the public will likely have to make choices, right? And I'm not sure, you know, where you know, individual MPs or MPPs stand on the issues, but I think that Hugh McKenzie does make some good points in terms of what we need to invest in, and maybe what we, you know, what we're investing in now that maybe isn't as important for the future, right? But definitely, the lack of funding over the past 10 years has really stripped down our social infrastructure. It's stripped down the ability for communities to make it on their own. And so there's definitely a need for spending in the area, and hopefully that the public sees that as well, and that the trend continues towards sort of a healing process, since the last 10 years have been filled with such cuts and devastation in the social infrastructure of the province.
Is the only hope for the government to step in and actually try to move towards some of the recommendations that you put forward in the report?
Well, I think that's just a first step. It's a first step to move towards some of these recommendations. I mean, we need, a task force to find out how to bring good jobs to Ontario, to build good jobs. But we need, long-term, consistent funding in social infrastructure, and the cuts over the past 10 years, whether they were federal cuts under Paul Martin as finance minister, or whether they were provincial cuts under the Conservative government in Ontario, have been devastating on the social infrastructure. And the cycle of poverty isn't necessarily a cycle, but more of young people not being given the resources they need to make the kind of good and healthy starts that are completely within our reach. And so we do need a long-term sustained plan to rebuild our social infrastructure, and we need to ensure that when we do it, it's in an inclusive manner that ensures that we take into account all the different peoples living in Toronto, in Ontario, in Canada, and that's something that I think is vital for a positive start.
What are the options that people can do to actually help bring about some of the changes that needs to be done in this area?
Like people in general, or do you mean like political politicians? Or?
People in general.
People in general. Well, I think that one first start is to ensure that you're investing in your community, right? And so whether it's you're investing your time or you're investing your resources to help build your communities, right? But also you have to be strong in terms of we have to be strong as citizens in Ontario and in Canada and stand up for the types of social structures that we believe in. And I think we've made a stand on healthcare and Medicare, but I think we also have to make a stand on the kind of social safety nets that we have in place to ensure that young people, at least, and those who are falling through the cracks are able to have the resources and opportunities to grow and become sort of productive members of our community. And I think that's a very important thing. And I think that to learn about the issues, to be involved in your community, is a first step, because it's a lot easier to not care about somebody if you don't know who they are, if they're just a statistic on a page. But this is happening throughout our neighborhoods in Canada. This is happening throughout our neighborhoods in Ontario, and especially in Toronto, where people are falling through the gaps at an alarming rate. I mean, 38% of all young families are falling through these gaps. That's no longer, a gap, but that's a big hole. And so I think we have to sort of work together to sort of close that hole and try and strengthen the systems that we have in place. And whether that just means getting involved in with your neighborhood or getting involved with your community, but those things have to happen for us to revitalize our economy, revitalize the jobs that we care about. And I think another step to do is support the businesses that provide quality jobs for people, right? Support, maybe the smaller businesses that are investing in people, and in the larger businesses that have, good employment policy as well. And I think that is a start for people. It's not a hopeless situation yet. I mean, this is something that I think Canadian citizens in general have the opportunity to make a lasting difference if we all choose to invest in social infrastructure, and we demand that of our governments. And I think that's very important, especially in this time.
Would the situation for young families be helped if poverty was recognized as a health issue?
Oh, definitely. I think there is definitely a trend already to recognize poverty as a significant determinant of health. There's tons of studies here in Toronto, and I know that the governments of this country are quite aware that poverty has significant health aspects to it, and I think that that's a very important link to make. But I think that we require action as well on it, and that's something that we haven't seen in the past. But we hope that with the new governments they're in, we have some hope that maybe there'll be some movement on that issue.
And if people want to lobby the government on behalf of younger families, can you suggest a good way to go about doing that?
Certainly. I would suggest that you can contact the Family Services Association to get information on the status of young families and possibly obtain one of our reports. You can reach us at our website, which is www.fsatoronto.com. Also, a good way is just to write individual letters to members of Parliament and key ministers. Ken Dryden, who is a Toronto Member of Parliament, is now the Minister of Social Development. He's somebody that has pledged in the last few weeks that he has a commitment to alleviating child poverty, and he has a commitment to improving the status of young people in Canada, and we should hold him to that commitment. Definitely the same goes with the Ontario government. They were elected on a platform that said that they were going to reverse the trends of the last 10 years and revitalize Ontario's social structures, and we have to keep them to it. We have to keep the Premier and the Ministers of Health, and by writing letters to them and by writing letters to your local representatives in municipal government is very important. I think municipal government has a significant role to play in improving the status and health of young families in Canada. And I think it's important to get involved in your municipal and local activities, whether it's elections or anything, because I think we can see great progress by ensuring that the people that are representing us at a municipal level are the kind of people we want dealing with the federal and provincial governments to fight for us in the cities. And I think that that is another big and important step, is to ensure that we also continue to hold the federal government responsible for their New Deal on cities. And I think their New Deal on cities is something that is very welcomed by the Family Services Association, and it's something that we hope the new Minister for Community and Cities, John Godfrey, is ready to take into significant action.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Craig.
Well, thank you, William.